This is episode 28 of The Living Reminders with Mary and Blake. From Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to The Living Reminders. It's a podcast dedicated to the leftovers on HBO. We're still here and so are you, so let's chat with Max Richter. Suddenly I'm hit. It's the darkness of the dawn. And your friends are gone. And your friends won't come. So show me where you fit. Hello, everyone. I'm your host, Mary Larson.
My name's Blake, and I have been so excited for this interview. Do you know that we've actually been working on this interview since halfway through last season?
And I think we said we wanted to do this.
Correct.
The moment we saw and heard Max's work.
I've been dying to finally get it done. And it just so happened that ultimately, finally, our schedules worked out where we could finally get it done. And what an absolute treat and pleasure to speak with Max Richter. And for those of you who don't know, Max Richter is the composer of The Leftovers, our favorite show. And what, I mean, just to learn everything that he has to say and do with this show, What a treat, right?
It really is. So without further ado, let's get into this interview.
Let's do it.
Joining us today is Max Richter. He's a German-born British composer who's been an influential voice in the post-minimalist composition and in the meeting of contemporary classical and alternative popular music styles since the 2000s. He has 7 solo works, including Memory House and Sleep, whose music has been featured on television, and on films such as Prometheus, J. Edgar, Need for Speed, and To the Wonder. But we all know him as the composer for our favorite television show on HBO, The Leftovers. Max, thank you so much for joining us on The Living Reminders today.
That's no problem. It's a pleasure.
How did you hear about The Leftovers and how did you link up with Damon?
I got a call from my agent saying, you know, these guys have been in touch, which is, you know, the sort of usual way. And basically, I think Damon had known my records for some years and been sort of fond of those. And at the same time, Pete Berg, the exec producer and director of some of the season one, had been to see a show on Broadway, a one-man version of Macbeth, which had used my music. So they were both sort of had me in their brains. And then they sent me the script. And I thought the script was, you know, just the best thing I'd ever read, basically. I was just like turning the pages, you know, it was just fantastic writing. So, you know, it was really just very, in a way, a very easy decision, you know, having then chatted with Damon on the phone and we got on really well. He's, you know, super smart and just a very thoughtful guy and also very, you know, very into music. So it was, you know, it was just a no-brainer, actually, to do the show.
Can you talk about some of the early conversations that you had with Damon about maybe, was it like about tone or what you wanted to propose to him? How did that go about?
Well, he had certain pieces of mine which he was sort of in love with and they'd been using in the temps. And that's always quite interesting. I mean, a lot of composers struggle with, you know, temp score, which is where, you know, the editors are using material to sort of give them some assistance with the editing and the pacing of the thing. And, you know, people struggle with that, you know, because they feel like their freedom is sort of being restricted. But in my case, I find it quite useful because, you know, directors and filmmakers are not musicians and it's a way for them to just indicate the kinds of things they like. So in this case, you know, they had a bunch of my stuff in the temp and those were the sort of starting points for our conversations. And we spent a lot of time shuffling things just back and forth and, you know, just sort of getting the right colors and the right palette and the right sort of tone for the thing. You know, a brand new project is always a kind of, you know, voyage into the unknown, which is, you know, very exciting and thrilling. But also at the same time, it's, you know, full of questions, a bit like the show itself. So it was a sort of organic back and forth process at the beginning to find our language.
Had you read the book, The Leftovers, before the series began?
You know, I deliberately didn't read it. I thought about reading it, but then I sort of felt I wanted to come to the material, you know, without any preconceptions, to sort of discover it, you know, along with the audience. You know, obviously a little ahead of them, but.
Had you ever scored for a television before?
No, it's the first television thing I've done.
Ooh, how exciting!
How does the television process differ from, like, I know you've recomposed or rearranged the, you know, Vivaldi,
yeah,
and it's gorgeous, by the way. What's that process like for television in comparison to rearranging?
Yeah, well, I mean, most of my work is actually, you know, making my own records and doing concert music. I sort of spend my time composing absolute things, you know, ballets and operas and all sorts of instrumental music and making records. I mean, that's the sort of center of my life. And I do write for film as well. Although I turn down sort of most things, I really only do things I'm enthusiastic about and I sort of fall in love with. And in this case, the process was really, really interesting because in some ways it's like film. But, you know, in a film, once you've done it, you've done it. You know, in the case of this show, it just keeps coming back every week. There's another one. But what's great about it is because you have so much time with the characters over this extended, you know, 10 episodes, you get a chance to really explore more than one dimension of them. And I really appreciate that about the television format, actually. You know, you don't get just one chance to tell the story from one perspective. You get many chances. And you really start to understand the nuances of the characters and the story in a sort of, in a kind of bird's eye view perspective. And it's incredibly satisfying.
You just said that, you know, you are able to pick your different topics and pick your different, your jobs, your scoring jobs, basically based upon if you love them or not. So I want to know what made you fall in love with The Leftovers.
In particular.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, I loved the emotionality of it. I thought it's a very humane piece of storytelling and it's very philosophical. I'm very interested in, you know, as we all are, I guess, at some level, you know, in these sort of big questions, the fundamental questions about, you know, why and how and what is our life and what does it amount to and what do things mean? And these are, you know, that's at the heart of The Leftovers, obviously in this very heightened state because of the departure. But I was just drawn to the themes. I thought it was a very powerful and very compelling set of questions.
So you talked about big things, like what is it all about and why are we here? And obviously the show tackles that.
Sure.
So we all know it's a heavily emotional show and
a
really intense subject, which is fantastic because it's rarely explored on television the way that it is on The Leftovers.
Mm-hmm.
With that in mind, from where do you draw your inspiration to write about these big themes like that?
Well, I think when I'm, you know, if I'm working on a project, then, you know, I'm sort of living in that world. I mean, it's an act of imagination. It's also, I mean, you know, we've all had troubles in our lives. So, you know, everyone has been unhappy. Everyone has been lost. Everyone has been, you know, abandoned in some form. So, you know, we all have sort of echoes of these experiences. And I think that's one of the reasons why the show sort of speaks to people quite deeply. Because it, you know, it finds a sort of, a mirroring a little bit in you know, our real lives. But, you know, from my point of view, you know, when I'm writing the score, I'm with the characters. I'm in that story.
Speaking about characters, oftentimes characters or places have themes of their own. So I wanted to know, how many different themes have you been working on that may reoccur throughout the show?
Well, there are a few. There's the departure theme itself, which appears right at the beginning of series one. And we have that extraordinary opening, which is, I think, one of the best openings on TV. Then it recurs in various sort of slowed down and altered versions. You know, lots of moments in the show. It also, you know, it's rearranged in different ways. Then there is a sort of, this is something which isn't so much in season two, but there's a sort of holy music, which Wayne had for a while. Then there's a kind of big orchestral sort of requiem cue, which again starts in episode one of season one, where Tom is under the water in the pool. Another amazing piece of amazing piece of image making, I think, and storytelling. So there are a few that come around.
We've discussed, you know, your inspiration to write about the emotional part of the show and the heaviness of this subject. Mm. But then we also discussed the themes themselves. But what is the process? How do you decide what you're going to write for each particular character or each particular theme? Is it something that you just start from ground up and then decide as you're going? Or how does that go about?
Well, it's a mix. It's a sort of a mixture of lots of theories and best intentions and planning and happy accidents and chaos, you know. You make material which you think will work for a situation and has a sort of potential to grow and expand and be developed. And you sort of happily sitting there with your piece of paper and a cup of coffee and feeling very happy. And then you put it on the picture and it's just like, no, that's not it at all. So, you know, it's that sort of very nice sort of organic, it's like a sort of composting process. You know, lots of material is sort of fed in and it seems to find its own way with the images. It seems to connect to the images, you know, sometimes in ways that you expect and everything goes to plan, and sometimes in very different ways. And, you know, bits of music which are intended for one situation end up being speaking to another situation much more beautifully. So it's really a fascinating puzzle-solving activity.
Have you ever written a theme, like maybe even for The Leftovers or a film that you've done, where you get it on screen, you look at it, you go, oh God, no, that was the worst choice I've ever made.
Well, that happens most days.
Does any character or theme feature distinct instruments that aren't typically used?
The score, generally speaking, is made up of instruments with a pronounced sort of decay in the sound. So instruments which don't have a sustained tone. So that means things like, you know, a piano, celesta, little bits of percussion and stuff. And that's a sort of hint, really, within the texture of the music, that this is all about things disappearing. So it's not obvious, but I like that idea that somehow the very fabric of the music, not only the notes, but the actual physical properties of the music sort of mirror the image of the great theme of the show. Beyond that, there's an awful lot of piano. And you know, piano is my instrument. I also think it has a kind of a simplicity and naturalness, which is appropriate for this show. But the piano itself is not an ordinary piano. It's a piano which has been muted with lots of felt inside it. So it sounds very dark. So in a way, it has a kind of a transparency, and it lets you sort of see the story and hear the story, which I think it works in this context.
wow, hearing that about the piano with the felt and making it much darker.
Yeah.
I actually really like that. That's really cool. I don't have the trained ear that my wife has, but because she's a musician. But is there any other instruments that you've used in an atypical way, in a sense, the way that you use the piano with the felt?
Yes. I mean, there's a whole recurring sequence of orchestral material, which happens in sort of moments of anxiety and tension. And this is a string orchestra, which is been processed via a bunch of sort of guitar pedals and distortion effects. So it sounds like a sort of fuzzy, droning sort of landscape. But we made that actually with a string orchestra. So, you know, it's a sort of, there are things like that which are sort of subversions of the normal. And I think you sort of feel the fingerprints of the original sources in there. So it's sort of both, you know, familiar and unfamiliar. And I think that suits, again, I think that suits the material.
You talked about using a string orchestra. Is that something that you do each time that you record? Or is it some of it synth? Or is it, are you...
It's a mix.
It's a mix? Oh,
yeah, that's awesome. It's a mix. I mean, it's mostly the real recordings. But as I say, you know, there is sort of a collision in there with some electronic media. I enjoy that hybrid language, actually.
Did you change any instrumentation in season 2 for the new characters or just because it's a new location?
I did. I made some, there are different kinds of electronics. It's a slightly brighter palette. And also there's some, it being Texas, I had to do some slide guitar things, which I thought would be fun. And there are very few of those. There's, I don't use it really in a kind of, in order to play things which feel like songs, but they're more like atmospheres. And the show relies, you know, the score relies a lot on atmospheres. And I felt that it would be nice to have some pedal steel guitar in there.
A lot of our fans have been very excited that we're going to be speaking with you, and they've been mentioning different moments that have been their favorite or different songs of yours that have been their favorite. But we want to know if you have a favorite moment that you've scored for the show.
There's a few, you know. There's a few. I mean, well, let's see. I mean, the swimming pool sequence at the opening in series 1, that's an amazing sequence, I think. And that's the first of these big orchestral numbers, which I loved. There's the Matt and Mary sequence, the first time we really meet them. And there's a sort of string quartet moment over those, which I think is really, it works really nicely. There's the Laurie Didn't Forget sort of lighter cue where, I mean, it's just sort of heartbreaking scene, unbelievably heartbreaking scene in the, again, season 1. I mean, there's so many, you know. I mean, the thing about this show is it's full of amazing images and I have to say, incredible acting, beautifully directed and amazing acting. And there are just lots and lots of moments I loved scoring.
I think when you can tell a show is really succeeding is when the music helps define the show itself. In particular, in Lost, you know, I read a bunch of articles where Damon wrote certain scenes with Michael Giacchino's score in mind.
Sure.
A lot of people are feeling that way about you and this show, that your score is helping define the show in a lot of ways. And it's the reaction is overwhelmingly positive. In fact, I have it on my iTunes. I was listening to it right before we spoke to you.
Okay, great.
Did you have any idea that people would like it so much the way they have?
Well, not really, to be honest. I mean, I think the thing is, whenever you're starting a new project, you really have, you know, you have lots of intentions and ideas, but you really don't know what it is you're making or how it will go until you've made it. And until it's in front of the audience. Until then, it's really all theoretical. And, you know, we felt excited and we felt like we had something when we did the first season. You know, I think we did. I think there was a buzz. And, you know, I think that that continues. I think there's a lot of excitement and a lot of sort of, you know, sort of good creative vibes in the team. So, you know, I guess we're doing something right.
We actually, one question I have for you is the show, do you help pick any of the, like the non-score for the show? Do you have any input on that? Like the previous episodes, they did the Lo Fang cover of You're the One That I Want. Do you have any input in that?
No, I don't actually. No, I leave that to Lisa. He's just, you know, most brilliant music genius. So that's all out of my hands. But I have to say, the choice of songs is, you know, relentlessly brilliant. So probably.
Well, while you're giving props to Lisa, I wanted to know if you had any other musicians or composers. Actually, so who are some upcoming composers? Some upcoming composers that you think we should be listening to?
Ah. Interesting thought. well, there's just like a million of them. On the other hand, by the time I've heard of them, they're probably not upcoming anymore. Because I'm very, very busy. So I you know, I'd have to have a think. There are millions, I'm sure. But I'm slightly drawing a blank right now.
Totally.
Sorry.
Okay.
Sorry.
Well, how
guys.
About this? What is one of your favorite scores of all time?
Wow. Again,
you know, we're putting you in the hot seat.
There are a lot. I mean, I guess I sort of gravitate to things which are really quite classic and quite musical. So, you know, that means, you know, historical stuff like, say, the Ennio Morricone scores. Stuff like, for example, I watched Maurice Jarre scored a film the other day, Dr. Zhivago, amazing score, absolutely magical. And then, you know, more recent things, say more electronic stuff, things like, for example, a lot of Clint Mansell's scores are great. You know, he does wonderful work. Again, there are so many, I basically love music which feels like it's really, really bringing something to the images and to the picture. So, you know, things which are thematic and can kind of stand on their own.
I loved Clint Mansell's work on The Fountain. Have you ever heard that?
Yeah, he does great things. You know, he's very creative.
He's great. And the other one I really like too is Daft Punk for the Tron Legacy soundtrack.
Okay, no, I don't know that one. So.
Oh, you got, if you like electronic, and I know you do, you got to listen to that one.
Okay.
They did a great job. Yeah. But it just makes you feel visceral when you're listening to it.
Sure.
And with that in mind too, when people are listening to your score for The Leftovers, Leftovers in particular, or any piece that you've done. What do you want the viewers or your listeners to feel when they hear your music?
Well, in the case of a score, I want them to feel the story more strongly in the what's going on the screen. I want them to be absorbed and transported. I'm not sure I really want them to hear the music, to be honest. I want them to inhabit the music, but without knowing that they're inhabiting it. You know, that's the sort of that kind of alchemy we're looking for. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's nice if people are aware of it and hear it. That's great. But, you know, I want them to feel like it's part of the texture of that world.
Well, you're doing a great job. A lot of the composers that we listen to, Blake and I, because I'm a musician especially, we really paid a lot of attention to the music and the shows that we watch.
Sure.
And the way I feel about yours is that it's a second location for me. It's not just, you know, New York or now Miracle, that your score for this show, it doesn't jar me away from what's going on. It's another location for me. So I really applaud you. It's working.
Oh, well, that's a very nice way to think of it, actually. I sort of feel in a way that music is a place, you know, each piece of music is its own sort of place. And that's great to hear you say that.
Have you completed the recording for season two, or are you still tweaking things, working on them?
We're very close to finishing. Very close. Yeah.
Is there something that we should be looking forward to that you can maybe not obviously spoil, but like maybe give an Easter egg that we should be listening to?
An Easter egg. Oh, that's very difficult. I'll say something stupid. It's more variations of the same, you know, more. I don't think there are anything, no Alphorn solos, you know, there's nothing that's going to feel dramatically sort of from another world.
Max, thank you so much. You know, we're really enjoying it. We're excited to see what you have in store for us for the rest of season two of The Leftovers. I want to know, outside of The Leftovers, what else do you have coming up for yourself with your music?
Well, I'm right in the middle of sort of touring a big project of my own called Sleep, which is an eight and a half hour long overnight piece, which we've been playing live, and that is quite the project.
It sounds like it. What's the instrumentation for Sleep?
Sleep is strings, vocals, and a lot of computers and pianos and, you know, all of that. So yeah, it's quite a big one to get going, and it's a thrill every time we get through it, honestly. You know, the morning comes and we're just really relieved.
Are you conducting this thing, or do you have a conductor for you?
No, I play the piano and all computers and synthesizers and all kinds of things.
Wow.
You must have a lot of coffee.
We go through a lot of coffee. That's what we do.
You must have really strong hands, too.
That's right. Yeah, it's a marathon, basically.
Max, where can our listeners find you, either on social media or a website or anything like in that nature?
Yes, the website is Max Richter Music, and Twitter and Facebook are the same, Max Richter Music. And yeah, that's it.
Well, this was an absolute pleasure, and as you said, I'm very excited that we got to speak with on Adolf Sachs's birthday. What a great day to speak to another musician.
Absolutely. 201.
Yes. Well, thank you so much again, Max, for coming on our podcast. Once again, we are The Living Reminders, and it has been an absolute joy to be speaking with you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Whew, that was awesome.
What, like I said at the beginning of the episode, like what an absolute treat, right? Like,
yes.
It's funny because a lot of people, you know, they watch the show, they listen to the music, and they don't really consider the music to be such a huge portion of what the show has to offer. But as you said in the interview, it's almost another place.
Yes.
It's almost another setting for the show. And for me, too, the music, as I said in the interview, the music can define the show. Mm-hmm. It can become an absolutely integral part to it. Like, we actually had the pleasure of speaking with Bear McCreary on our other podcast, Outlander Cast, about his work on Outlander. And his work on that show is, it's indispensable, right?
Yes.
But the funny thing is, he also is the composer for The Walking Dead. And while The Walking Dead is great, it's only tone music. It doesn't define that show. And what Max Richter has done is given The Leftovers this total other dimension and a completely different layer that not only the show deserves, but we as the viewers deserve. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine anybody else doing it, right?
No, I agree. This guy is just downright cool.
He's cool to talk to. Like, I loved his accent. Like, he was very great. And the thing I'm most excited about, actually, is when he mentioned the fact that he was doing this kind of guitar twangy theme for The Leftovers. Mm-hmm. And we heard it in the last episode, finally.
Yes.
It was this slide guitar, and what an amazing addition to the themes that he's already done. Like, you've already fallen in love with the piano theme, you've already fallen in love with the beautiful violin music that he's done and the themes that he's created. But that twang, oh man, just made my night when I finally heard
it. It was cool, not gonna lie.
I loved it. Well, my love, I think it's time to, unfortunately, close out the show. Mm-hmm. As much as I don't want to, as much as I want to keep talking about all of this, I would, it's time. You ready?
Yep. Please reach out to us on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Our handles are all the same. It's Living Reminders.
And if the social media isn't enough for you, you can always get us at livingreminders@gmail.com.
Check out past interviews and other episodes of the Living Reminders podcast at thelivingreminders.com.
And while you're at the website, you can check out this little button on the top right-hand corner that says support. And if you want to donate $1 or $2 a month or do a one-time donation on PayPal, you're more than likely and happy to do that. We'd gladly accept it. But money aside, that doesn't really matter to us as much as you telling a friend that we exist. If we provide a good enough companion for you in the show of The Leftovers, and what we do brings a value to your experience of The Leftovers, we want you to tell somebody that we exist and that the show exists. It helps build a better community, not only for our show, but more importantly, The Leftovers in general.
That's right. That's right. And you can tell more people about us by going to iTunes. I am so excited. I gave you, our listeners, this goal. Let's get to 70 ratings and reviewings on iTunes. We are almost there. We are now at 66.
Whoa.
And I want to give a shout out to Will and Sky's mom, who wrote great podcasts. Loved the intimacy and the insightfulness of this podcast. Also appreciate how listener friendly they are, and their takes on the shows are the show is wonderful.
Hey, here's an idea. You know what? I'm feeling good today just because of Max Richter. You ready? For this?
Okay, yeah.
Feeling really good. The person who gets the 70th review,
yes,
gets a free giveaway from the Mary and Blake store.
Awesome.
How's that sound?
Love it.
I love it too. Anything you want from the Mary and Blake store, it's yours for free if you're number 70. So, but number 70's got to write a review.
Yes.
Okay, we'll put it that way. So,
can't just rate it with the stars. You got to write.
Got to do that. All right. So, the last thing I want you to do is check out the Living Reminders blog. So go to thelivingreminders.com, click the button that says blog, and you'll be able to find all of the wonderful and excellent articles, actually, that we were helped with by all the writers for the questions for Max Richter. So I wanted to thank everybody, all the writers there. So check out the Living Reminders blog.
Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Mary Larson.
My name's Blake.
And we're the Living Reminders, and we're still here.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.